Hey everybody, welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. My name is John Kutzmita, and every week I am joined with Brent Johnson, the man behind the dollar milkshake theory. Now, if you're not familiar with what that is, please, I recommend you visit milkshakespod.com, our website, where you can learn more about the theory, what it means, and the role the US dollar plays in the global financial system. Now, in this week's show, we do talk a bit about the dollar, but mainly we focus on what potentially is going to happen in the US economy should the debt ceiling hit some sort of crisis level. That's the drama that we've been seeing in Congress lately. We also have an interesting conversation around what would potentially happen if Janet Yellen decided to circumvent Congress and just print money into the system anyways, which technically she could. On that theme, we also talk about the role that Powell would play in that environment. And we continue to talk about Federal Reserve rate hikes, recent inflation, and some of the stuff that's been going on in financial markets, including the continual pullback from gold. So I think you're going to really enjoy this episode, and we appreciate you as always for joining us. So without further ado, let's get started with another episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness.
Please speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
I drink your milkshake.
Brent, it's good to have you back. You and I had a bit of a hiatus. Sometimes travel and time zones and all those things get in the way. Part of your travels, you were just in Florida for the Rebel Capitalist event. You want to give us a recap on that?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, first of all, apologies to anybody who missed our, you know, missed us putting out an episode over the weekend. You know, I was traveling. I was at a conference in Mallorca, which was honestly, Mallorca was just incredible. And then stopped in London. And then from there was back in Orlando for the Rebel Capitalist conference. And I thought, you know, doing one of these on the road would be relatively easy. But, you know, with you being halfway around the world in Australia and me, it just for whatever reason, it didn't work out. So apologies for the delay, but yeah, Rebel Capitalist was so much fun. You know, I saw a bunch of people there that I'd seen at previous conferences, got to hang out with George a little bit, and then all the other speakers. He had a really good lineup of speakers, and you know, I was trying to figure out. I was 2 years ago when I did the Rebel Capitalist. I gave the whole milkshake theory overview, right? And then last year, I didn't even hardly talk about the dollar. I talked more about the psychology of markets, and then this year, I wasn't going to talk about it. Either I wasn't going to talk about the dollar or the dollar milkshake theory, but with all that was going on regarding, you know, the de-dollarization and the headlines and the fervor, for lack of a better word, and I had a number of people emailing me and, you know, DMing me asking me my latest thoughts, and so I was, well, I guess I kind of have to talk about it. And so what I did is I actually mentioned it on this show, you know, a couple of weeks ago, is that I basically started off, and for the first 20 minutes I argued against the dollar. I basically came out there and I said, you know, all these headlines have been coming around, and you know what, I think they might be right. And so I spent 20 minutes telling everybody why the dollar was going to fall. And I could look around the room and I could see everybody's eyes kind of lighten up. Oh, this is great. He's finally figured it out, right? and then I basically said, well, you know, despite all this, I don't believe any of it. Or it's not that I don't believe it, it's just that that's only one side of the story. And so then what I did for the next 20 minutes is I went back through the same slides that I'd already gone through, and I told the other side of the story with each slide, and had a lot of people come up afterwards and, you know, tell me they enjoyed it. And, you know, it's a good way to remind that you always got to look at both sides of every story. And I think that's what this is all about. It's kind of removing some of the mystery or the fervor or the one-sided arguments when it doesn't matter whether it's the dollar, whether it's gold, whether it's equities, whether it's recession, whether it's, you know, real estate. There's always two sides to every story. And, you know, you're never going to really, really understand your side unless you understand the other side better than the other guy does. And so I think we've touched on that quite a bit on this channel, but did a lot of that at Rebel Capitalist. And, you know, I think the work that George does is great. And he does a very good job of teaching, you know, how things actually work. And so that was my kind of chance to kind of do the same thing.
Yeah, I think... we've slowly become the pro-conviction, anti-certainty right. YouTube show. So it's good that you could kind of really hammer that point for people who maybe haven't been tuning in much. You know, kind of speaking of that fervor, if you will, and it goes in conjunction with your travels, as well as playing this anti-dollar narrative, you've slowly have created or developed this cab driver dollar deranged syndrome where everywhere you go, you kind of talk about cabbies taking taking dollars. You want to kind of highlight some of that and some of the reactions you've been getting lately?
Yeah, well, it's all pretty funny because it's just something I've always done, and it's just kind of a habit, you know. So I'm always like, hey, you take dollars, and you know, the thing is, 9 times out of 10, they say no. There's actually only ever been 2 times where somebody said no. One of them was in Spain, in Barcelona, and the other time was in London, probably 5 years ago. And so when I was flying back to Florida, I went through London and had dinner with a friend, and so I jumped in the cab, and you know, I almost wasn't going to do it because I knew he was going to say no. But then at the end, I was like, so will you take dollars? And he said, yeah, sure, no problem, I'll take dollars. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, even in London, they'll tell you dollars. You know, forget the Revolutionary War 250 years ago. They, you know, I thought they'd maybe still have a chip on their shoulder from that. But no, he said he would take. I paid with my credit card, so I didn't even give him dollars, but he said he'd take it if I wanted to. So
anyway, but
it is funny. And part of the reason I tweet it out is to see the reaction I get. And of course, there's so many people out there that's like, no way, this didn't happen. It's a total lie. And by the way, if the cab driver's accepting dollars, that must be the top. And it's just so funny. It's just people get so worked up over it. It's just kind of a fun thing to do, you know? Anyway, I recommend whenever you travel somewhere, ask them if they'll take dollars and see what they say.
You know, one of the things I want to highlight about that is because obviously we lean a certain direction when it comes to the US dollar and some of these macro or financial market narratives. But I want to be clear, like we kind of are having a laugh here, but we're not necessarily doing it with a chip on our shoulder. There's still very much we're just trying to tell a story. And right now this is, you know, our version or our side of the story, particularly your side of the story. And so don't take this as like we're parading around that, you know, the dollar's the greatest thing ever, the US government's the greatest thing ever. Going back to what you just did at Rebel Capitalist, it's very much being able to take both sides of the story. And, you know, you've said repeatedly on the show, one of the things that's the message about the dollar milkshake theory that people need to get is that it's not that the dollar is necessarily is never going to lose its reserve status. It's just don't go all in against the dollar thinking that that's just around the corner.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. That's what the milkshake theory has always been, as a way to push back really against the people who pound the table on US dollar hyperinflation right around the corner, which has been preached for literally decades now. And trying to get people to understand, while it's certainly important to own gold and have some protection against fiat losing value, I mean, I think everybody should do that, but it doesn't mean you have to go all in against it. And, you know, related to that, I think, was it the last episode that we recorded? I talked about how, we talked about the gold trade, right? And, you know, I'm very bullish gold long term. But, you know, a couple of weeks ago, gold had got up to like 2050, 2060. It kind of revisited that level again a couple of weeks ago. And so we bought puts, right? And, you know, the puts, we bought the 2040 puts. It went to 2010. We sold the 2040 puts. We bought the 2010 puts. It bounced again last week. And now we've got gold at 1990, right? And so those puts, we rolled those puts down. And so, again, it's not that we're anti-gold. We're very much pro-gold, but we think there are certain times where you can do a short-term tactical trade against your long-term conviction. And it's kind of interesting. The friend of mine who had messaged me and told me, hey, I think gold's going to pull back here. And then I looked at it and I thought so as well. That's the guy I stopped and had dinner with in London. So we were talking about last week, we were talking about the fact that we thought gold was going to pull back because it tested 2050 again last week and pulled back. And then today, you know, it broke below 2000. So we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll rebound and go back higher. But, you know, when we both saw it was very overbought and the fervor, again, whenever you have a lot of fervor in one direction, it's probably going to go the other way. That was a signal to both of us that at least in the short term, it was overbought. And, you know, I give that guy a lot of credit because he's a super long-term gold bull, but he had the open-mindedness to do a short-term trade against his long-term thesis.
So One of the things that, you know, has been also part of the conversations we've had since the beginning of this year is your kind of thought on where the market overall would be going this year, particularly this time of year. It seems like, you know, there's other people who share your opinion that are also vocal, have kind of been doing their own media roadshow, pounding the table that, you know, recent rate hikes have been too much. And, you know, last week we didn't do a show, but last week we had CPI, and I don't remember the exact number. At this point, it was like 4%. I mean, it's obviously we're seeing the rate of change coming down, but inflation is still above the Fed's policy target. We have a lot of forward-looking indicators that are suggesting the economy has already rolled over. But what are you feeling right now? I mean, we had the I think it was retail sales this morning, and it wasn't necessarily indicative of an economy, especially one that's consumer based, that's slowing. So it feels like we're getting closer to the edge, but it also feels like we're taking two steps back.
Yeah, so I actually remember when we talked last time, I actually thought that CPI was going to be, I thought it was going to meet expectations. I didn't think it was going to be a blowout number, but I thought it would meet, or maybe I thought it would meet expectations and maybe even beat expectations a little bit. And it actually came in just a little bit under expectations. But in my opinion, it didn't come in under expectations enough that it will derail Powell from hiking again. I actually think as of right now today, I think that Powell is going to raise again one last time in June before a pause. Now, I think there's a lot of people out there who say, no, he's going to pause now like he's done. And maybe he is. I don't have a super strong conviction that he's going to raise again. But as of right now, you know, markets are still pretty close to their highs. You know, unemployment's been low. Inflation came in. It didn't come in hot, but it wasn't crashing. And I think he'll continue on his path. Now, should he? He probably shouldn't. He probably should pause here and wait a month or so, right? But I don't think he will. You know, I reserve the right to change my mind. But, you know, I do kind of think, though, what could cause him to pause, even though I don't think he's going to do it right now, is the debt ceiling showdown, right? We've got this debt ceiling that's kind of sometime in the next 30 days, could be in the next 2 weeks, you know, the government's not going to be able to spend any more money because the TGA account's going to be drawn down to levels where they can't, there's no more cash to spend. And that could make things very interesting. So when I say he, I'm talking about Powell. He said several times that, you know, that we can't allow this to happen, and it's not our job to do that. You know, we're not focused on that. You know, that's something that Congress has to figure out. But, you know, clearly they are there for a reason. And if markets were to go crazy as a result of the debt ceiling either not being extended or, you know, the political drama surrounding it, then I would expect him to pause if there was a lot of chaos around the, you know, the Fed date and if the debt ceiling, you know, extension was kind of around those same dates as well.
Yeah, not to to add a little speculation to what we're talking about here. If animal spirits weren't what they were, you know, it's like the Fed has backed themselves into this forward guidance corner, right? Where, you know, we're hanging around every word that they say. If we weren't so trigger happy to certain actions or vocabulary, do you think, given that we are, that animal spirits are such a real thing when it comes to markets, that that's why Powell is going to potentially do another 25 basis points instead of more pragmatically pausing? Because if he pauses, everyone thinks, you know, historically, there's never been a pause and a hike again. So everyone's going to automatically think that's, you know, the signal that a pivot is next. Do you think if that element wasn't there, that he would pause here? Would it, you know, when you're looking at the economic data, does it make you feel like this is enough?
Yeah, my guess is that he thought that by raising to these levels, he already would have slowed the economy enough. And when not just the economy, I mean, you could look at some of the data. The data says the economy is slowing, right? With the exception of unemployment. Unemployment stayed very low. But a lot of the other stuff shows that it is coming down. I think he's happy that he's, quote unquote, making progress. But I bet if we would have sat there a year ago and sat down with him and we injected him with truth serum, right? So we knew he was telling the truth. And we said, do you think you'll be able to get to 5.5% before the whole market, comes down? I don't think he would say yes. So I think he's probably a little surprised at how high he's been able to get things. But to your point, I think these animal spirits are part of the reason that he is continuing to hike. Because without the markets kind of being near their highs, you know, if let's say markets were 20% below where they were, right? Let's say they were back where they were like in October or the end of September. And we saw the new data coming in at the levels that it's coming in. I don't think there's any question he would be pausing. I think he would, you know, it makes sense to pause here. But with, you know, like you said, the animal spirits at their highs, and, you know, every time there's even a hint of, you know, bad news, which means the hike is potentially sidelined, then, you know, equities ramp. And he's so the funny thing is many of the people who want him to turn, the fact that they're trying to front run it is making him continue to hike, in my opinion. Again, whether he should be or not, I've tried very hard over the last 4 or 5 years to get away from what I think should be done, because it doesn't matter what I think should be done. What matters is what Powell thinks should be done, or other, you know, political leaders or monetary authorities. So I just try to figure out what they're actually going to do, as opposed to what I think they should do. And number one, that helps keep me sane. Number two, it helps me, you know, to kind of see things a little bit more clearly. And number three, you know, you just kind of take them at their word until they go back on it. And I'm not sitting here saying that you should trust central bankers. It's kind of the opposite. But he's been very, very, I've mentioned this before, he's been the most clearly spoken central banker I can remember. He has said, we're going, you know, 2% is our objective on inflation. We're going to keep hiking until, you know, we know we've got it under control. It's very likely that we will, there is going to be some pain. People are going to have to lose their jobs, and we may even have a recession. You know, he can't be much more clear than that. And, you know, this idea that he doesn't know what he's doing, again, he may be foolish and he may be misguided, but he's not stupid. He knows what he's doing. The whole point of raising rates is to slow the economy and to bring asset prices down. And if you slow the economy and bring asset prices down, then, you know, his thought is that then consumer prices will follow that. Demand will come down and consumer prices will fall as well. And, you know, I think he's going to continue going until he can't go anymore. And then when people beg him to pivot, then he'll pivot, because then there's no danger in pivoting, right? If people are begging you to pivot and you pivot, you don't really get in trouble for pivoting. So, yeah, this is a very long way of saying I agree with you. I think the animal spirits are a big part of why he's continuing on his path.
Well, you did mention that naughty S word, should. People get really caught up in this notion of, you know, markets should do X, Y, Z, not to mention what politicians or central bankers should do. So I think that's a good reminder. You know, going back to this kind of 0.25% rate hike, may or may not happen. You mentioned the debt ceiling. If Capitol Hill is so foolish as to take us over that cliff, and there's chaos in the markets, the central banks have the tools and the utilities to kind of maybe settle things. Maybe they go into some form of liquidity providing. Absent of that, getting to that point, like, why would this running to the finish line or the end of the wire situation with the debt ceiling cause Powell to pivot? Why would a 25 basis points hike add any more chaos to what is, you know, kind of more of a political standoff?
Well, essentially, the reason would be, and this is where you kind of, again, you have to kind of put your biases aside. And listen, first of all, I should say, nobody knows what would happen if the U.S. were to default. Right? Nobody. We can all kind of game it out, think about this derivative and that knock-on effect, but nobody really knows. That said, where it gets a little weird is that if the Treasury doesn't meet their interest payment, then that means somebody who owes somebody else money isn't going to get their money. So, you know, it's kind of like one of these daisy chain things. So if the Fed withholds their payment, then somebody else is not going to receive their cash flow. They could potentially have to then, you know, withhold their payment to somebody else. And it's basically a dollar shortage at that point, right? And so you get a worldwide dollar shortage because, you know, people all over the world are expecting to get these interest payments. And perhaps, you know, Treasury prices rally on that, you know, or Treasury bills rally on that because everybody's trying to get either collateral or cash. that would probably send the dollar higher. Again, we don't know for sure. You would think that if someone's defaulting, you wouldn't want their paper. But when this is the paper that underlies the entire system, and you know, you could learn, you could end up in a dollar shortage situation very quickly. Again, whether this would happen, I don't know. I think that that's what would happen. And so as a result, the last thing Powell would want to do, if we have a crisis where dollars are disappearing and there's a collateral shortage and there's a dollar shortage, it's unlikely he would want to make that even tighter, right? In fact, he may have to go the other way on that and actually provide some short-term funding, whether it's an immediate return to QE or whether it's another, you know, facility similar to the one they just rolled out for the banks. Yeah, I don't know. There's a number of things that they could do. But, you know, I would caution those who say if the U.S. defaults, that's really bad for the dollar. I mean, it's clearly not good for the dollar, you know, in the long term, but, and it would be a bad, bad thing. It'd be a bad precedent to set if it happened. But in the very short term, I think the dollar would actually rise. And for those who think that I'm just totally off my rocker, you know, go back 12 years ago, I think it was August of 2011, when the U.S. debt got downgraded by Standard & Poor's. And, you know, it was a similar thing. It was related to the debt. And when they got downgraded, Treasury prices rallied. Now, you would think if you got downgraded, nobody would want that paper. But because of the uncertainty it sent through the markets, everybody bought Treasuries. I would argue that that's likely what's to happen again. If the U.S. misses a payment, there's definitely going to be, at least at a very short term, a collateral shortage or a dollar shortage, probably pushes the price higher. And, you know, crazy things will probably happen.
Well, it's interesting because last week we talked about, and we have other times as well, the idea of short-term decisions, long-term effects. This is almost kind of a flip of that, right? Yeah. But also in the same vein, is kind of think about things in two different time horizons. How is this in the short term going to play out, as well as the long-term effects of it? And that's really where I think people get caught up in this, in the narrative. They're not necessarily wrong. It's just kind of a time mismatch. Like, sure, a U.S. government default is bad for the dollar long term, but depending on what you're trying to do or what positions you're taking short term, it could actually go against you very, 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 very quickly. So in
that's right.
In it, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, whatever happens, it will be a short term thing. You know, they're not going to default and not make a payment for 6 months. You know, maybe it takes 5 days, maybe it takes 6 days, maybe it only takes 6 hours. But both sides, and when I say both sides, both the Democrats and the Republicans want to spend money. And so the idea that they're not going to figure out some solution that allows them both to spend money is in my opinion, a bit ridiculous. Of course they're going to. Now, what political drama and what horse trading goes on between now and then, I'm sure it's not going to be quick and easy. My guess is that it's going to get kicked down the road like 30 days or 45 days or 60 days, and we'll be talking about this again in August or September. You know, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, and with that in mind, we've talked about, you know, the thought or the viewpoint that none of these decisions are really being made. There's a lot of collusion involved, right? There's this, and what I'm speaking of in this respect is the central bank monetary policy butting up against the debt ceiling dramas, and Powell kind of being in somewhat of a conundrum coming into the next potential FOMC rate hike decision. It would seem that in a quiet room somewhere, they're saying, please, we're doing such a good job with rate hikes and getting this inflation thing under control. Can you please just settle the debt ceiling beforehand so I have clearance to raise another 25 basis points? I can imagine that, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but it would probably be the perfect storm for what the Fed has been doing if this debt ceiling thing can get figured out before the next FOMC.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'm sure of is Powell does not want to go into the FOMC meeting with this hanging over his head, right? And you don't want to, I think the Fed meeting's on like June 16th or 17th or something like that. You don't want Janet Yellen to come out on June 14th and say, I have one more week of liquidity left before it's actually totally rock bottom. And then 2 days later, Powell has to go out there, it hasn't been solved yet, and say whether or not he's raising rates. I mean, he does not want that, right? I would say that if he wants to pause, that would be the perfect reason for him to pause, right? Because, you know, but the problem with that is then, you know, again, you have to see all both sides. The problem with that is then now all of a sudden Powell's being political, right? He's making a decision based on political shenanigans rather than monetary policy that he should be looking at. So, you know, I feel like on this issue, and again, we talk about this a lot, I feel like I could argue either side of this issue pretty well. And I try not to spend too much time on it other than trying to understand what would happen on either scenario, because who knows what's going to happen. Again, we could wake up tomorrow morning, there's a solution that they say, we've kicked the can down the road 3 months and it's behind us, right? Or it could go right up into the meeting, and, you know, I think June is going to be pretty hectic regardless of whether they get the debt ceiling kicked down the road or not.
Yeah. And I don't want to keep harping on the debt ceiling and the Fed, but I still think there's some interesting things that we haven't really talked about here yet, or at least I have an interesting question that I'd like your thoughts on. Once we get to a point where for some reason or another, they've exhausted the rate hikes, Powell's sitting at over 500 basis points. For at least since the GFC, I don't think their gun has been ever, you know, loaded this well. So they've got a lot of runway to go. They've got to feel good about that, even though inflation's kind of feeling a little sticky at times. Once it comes to some sort of monetary easing phase, do you think, being as high as they are, that they're able to kind of establish a new paradigm here in terms of monetary policy? Because lately it's been raise a little bit, slash it to zero as soon as there's chaos. Do you think we can go in a crisis from 525 basis points to 300 basis points and just sit there? Or are we going to go chase the zero bound again?
That's a very good question. And I wish I had a good answer for you. I don't. I've thought about that a lot, and I just honestly, like, what do you know me? Like, if I have an opinion, I'll say it. But when I don't know, I'll just tell you I don't know, and I just really don't. I tend to think that it's not going to go back to 300 basis points and just sit there. But you know what gets really interesting, and again, I don't think this is going to happen, but where it would really, really get interesting is if. I've got to qualify this, because it would be really tough to do this, especially after Yellen has pounded the table so hard that she's running out of liquidity. But the reality is that the Treasury, this is where MMT comes in. Okay, so MMT, and I know when I say MMT, there's a lot of people who immediately roll their eyes and say, oh, this is, you know, gobbledygook, you know, Keynesian, you know, wet dream that, you know, can't possibly be real. Well, the thing about MMT, and we don't have time to get into this too deep right now, but MMT is actually descriptive. It's not prescriptive. And what I mean by that is, if you go back and you look at the work of Warren Mosler and Stephanie Kelton, the proponents of MMT, they're really telling you how the mechanics work. In other words, they're describing how the system works. Now, there are a lot of people who then will take that description and put a prescription on top of it now that they understand how that works. And where I'm going with this is the government actually, and MMT will tell you that people have it backwards. That the first thing they do is the government borrows the money and then they spend it, right? But in actuality, if you understand the mechanics, they don't need to do that. The government can spend it into existence. They could just credit people's account. And they don't have to borrow money to do it. They just credit people's account. But that would be highly inflationary. So the way that they control the inflation is then they would either raise taxes or they issue treasury bonds to soak up some of that liquidity, right? But the fact is that Yellen, if we reach the debt ceiling, she could just keep spending money into existence. Okay, and Powell could keep raising rates. And she could spend, and then he could raise, and she could spend, and he could raise. And as long and then she just doesn't issue any treasury bonds, right? Technically, she could do this because she's not borrowing any more money. She's just spending it. Now, there would be a lot of people going, what the hell is going on, including Congress, because Congress is supposed to control spending. But I'm just saying, technically, she could do that. And it maybe would lead to a constitutional crisis and, you know, a big, you know, market chaos. But again, there's nothing that says she has to borrow before she spends it. And so it would be really interesting if for whatever reason, when I say interesting, it wouldn't be fun. It just wouldn't be boring, right? It just wouldn't be boring. And I'm not advocating, and again, not advocating, just explaining. But that would, to me, that would be the most interesting thing. If Yellen just came out one day and said, okay, we're not going to borrow anymore, but we're still going to pay these bills. And people would be like, what do you mean you were going to pay these bills? And the next day, the money's in the accounts. And people are like, where'd that money come from? And she says, it came from me. And Powell says, well, she's spending money. I'm going to raise rates because somebody has to rein this in, right? And so it the idea of rates continuing to go up as opposed to going back down is actually a more interesting philosophical idea for me than them going down. Anyway, that was a little bit of a tangent, but anyway.
Well, I know where I'm going to snip a clip for more fervor, as you were mentioning it earlier in the episode. That little segment right there is going to find its way on Twitter. I can guarantee you that. So we'll get people all fired up. So for anyone who doesn't,
just make sure everybody, I'm explaining. I'm not advocating. I'm explaining.
So MMT, modern monetary theory, many consider the idea of just straight money printing. Do some digging on that on your own to kind of better understand the MMT philosophy. But it's interesting to think how potentially outside of all the drama, Auntie Yellen and Uncle Powell could be kind of running their own little monetary circus where she's issuing liquidity into the market, but between rate hikes and quantitative tightening, potentially Powell is offsetting some of that inflationary impact. And then everyone's standing around looking like, wait, why do we even have Congress involved? So it would be a fun experiment.
Well, that's what would be interesting, because Congress would be like, what the hell? We're supposed to control the power of the purse, not Janet Yellen, right? So anyway.
They'd be so butthurt. So you know, while we're on this topic and before we wrap up, the idea of these potential scenarios playing out, we kind of got a little off, you know, on the fringe there a moment ago, but still it's good. It's fun to think about these situations because I think it helps you then look at what is actually going on or more likely to happen with a different pair of eyes. Do you have any thoughts or context that you want to apply to some of the money aggregates? A lot of attention has been put on M2 and how, you know, it's now negative for the first time or the first time in a really long time. Do you have any thoughts on, is that something we should be looking at and what the potential impact is?
Well, again, I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, one of the things that if Powell wasn't so gung-ho on raising rates, he would look at that and he'd say, you know what? The fact that the year-over-year growth of M2 is not contracting that much, but the year-over-year growth of it is contracting and is negative. So it's down from where it was a year ago. It's kind of like the CPI, right? Because we're now going year-over-year and because the rate of growth has slowed so much, it's actually negative. The overall aggregate hasn't come down that much. It's come down a little bit. I don't know where I was going with this, but I think it is important. And this would be the argument for Powell to pause. And the one thing I would say about this also is that just, you know, let's go back a year ago and everybody thought the Fed was always going to, you know, they'd hiked once or twice at this point. They weren't going to be able to hike that much more. They were going to have to go back to QE immediately. But here we are, we're a year later and M2 is, you know, there's always these charts that go around that people, you know, they use it to make their argument. And then when it goes the other way, they just don't talk about these charts anymore. But 18 months ago, the year-over-year M2 chart was every inflationist dream. You know, they've created 40% of all the dollars ever created in existence in the last 12 months or whatever it was. Well, you don't hear those same people saying, you know, they've destroyed 40% of the dollars that were ever created in the last 12 months. But to me, the rate at which the year-over-year change of M2 is falling, the fact that lending, you know, we talked earlier this year about how lending had actually picked up over the last year, that's kind of ground to a halt. You've got a number of factors now that say the economy is slowing. It's probably time to pause on the rate hikes. This gets back to, like, Powell probably should pause. I just don't think he's going to.
Awesome. Well, look, man, it's good to have you back. It's good to be back in front of the camera and microphone with you. And we're going to get back into our rhythm now that your maybe spring tour of monetary festivals and conferences is off the calendar for now. So hopefully we'll be bringing some midweek additions to the show as well. So until then, everybody, please find us on YouTube at Milkshakes Pod. You can find us on Twitter as the same avatar, Milkshakes Pod. If you want to learn more about us and the show and the dollar milkshake theory, you can go to milkshakespod.com. Brent is on Twitter at Santiago AU Fund. I'm on Twitter at John Kutzmita. Brent, any last words before we sign off?
No, just keep an open mind and stay grounded, and hopefully we survive the next couple of months and we can have a good laugh about all this madness.
Sounds like a good one, man. All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.